This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
It's Monday, November 22nd, 2010. The radio program on the air now coast to coast on the Fan Radio Network, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation, simulcast on Sirius Channel 97 and on Rogers Sportsnet. In high definition, Bob McCowan, John Shannon in our Toronto studios. A little bit later on, he's the National League MVP. Toronto's Joey Votto wins the award in a landslide today. He will join us to talk about it. His growing up in Toronto, how you get into baseball. Well, that's not common, at least at the level at which Joey Votto plays. And his life and times with the Cincinnati Reds. Joey Votto a little later on primetime. But first, in studio, for the next couple of seconds, we affectionately call the sheriff of the National Hockey League, the vice president of hockey ops, Coley Campbell, is with us. How are you?
Great. Yourself?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Don?
Doing well. Who's interviewing whom here?
Well, he has just asked a question. It's not a specific one. Did you have any other questions you wanted to ask before we get started?
Yeah.
You have a list? It goes into his pocket. All right, let's get to we have a bunch of things to talk about, but let's get to this this case, this issue, the Dean Warren issue. In general terms, regrets about what came out, what happened here, the process, anything about this that you wish hadn't happened?
Well, your emails are personal, you thought, but they're not dishonest. If I knew the world would be reading my emails, I might have wrote them differently, not like a farmer or like I'm in the dressing room. But as far as the referee, Dean Warren, not being able to cut it, make the grade, be a referee in our league, I have no regrets. We did everything right. We learned in our Andy Van Halleman days. Andy came in, and Andy was a great referee and wasn't as good an administrator as we had hoped, but he didn't know the rules with HR and what you have to do in the millennium. And Andy felt a lot of people couldn't cut the grade, and we learned how to let officials go properly. And we worked through it with the Officials Association, how we would do it properly and humanely. And people think we just want to let these guys go left and right. We invest a lot of money in officials, and we hang in there with them. A lot of times the fans, the media, the coaches, the managers want to release a guy because he makes a mistake. For example, we had a rookie in that Toronto game with Florida a couple weeks ago where he didn't make the call with Colton Orr and the interference in the goaltender. People were yelling for this poor kid's head. It was this one of his first games. He's a rookie in the National Hockey League, and you wouldn't do that with a first-round pick if you give the puck away. And and he was scheduled to do one more game, then go down to the minors and back and forth. That's how they break them in. And our people who we report to, in a sense, we filter all the complaints from the teams. We filter our complaints if we see in a game our issues with calls. We fish them through. We run them by the director of officiating, who he works with other officiating managers. And I don't pretend to know how to referee. I know I complained as a player. I complained as a coach, and I wanted answers. The way our managers and coaches used to get answers is after games or between periods, they'd run down and bang on the doors and kick the doors, and we don't allow that anymore. There's a $25,000 fine. We see it in our room. We promise accountability to our managers, our owners, and we send it through our officiating people, and they make decisions on who stays and who doesn't stay. And when Andy Van Halleman got the job, we let a number of people go, I think 8 or 10 trainees, et cetera, and a number of them filed appeals, came back. They're still with us today. And I think we let maybe 4 or 5 go in the last 8 years, and that's a small number for the number we have. And it's when they can't cut it, Bob. And in the Dean Warren case, Dean just couldn't make it as a referee, and there was nothing personal. We had no agendas against him, and he just had a problem officiating. We had that R&D camp in the lockout. We invited Dean Warren to come and referee during the camp, but we had no agendas against him. We were trying to work with everyone, and we liked Dean Warren as a person. It's just that it was proven that he couldn't make it. And do I make the final decision? I sign the final papers as director of operations, but I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. I'm just saying this is how it works. I don't know how to analyze a referee. We've got people who are professionals of that and who have done it their whole lives.
So in a nutshell, it was Stephen Walcom at that time, the head of the chief of referees, that made the ultimate decision. You signed the papers, but Stephen
made
the
termination papers. Stephen and his crew of officiating managers, they filter through them, and they have their give and takes and analysis of these guys. And as I said again, we put a lot of time into these guys. It's tough to bring a new one along. You know, you don't want to get rid of them because it's a tough job to officiate in the NHL.
Here's the part. One of the parts that's puzzling to me, having read the court documents and the judge's submission at the end of the Labor Relations Board hearing, which Mr. Warren lost, by the way, to the National Hockey League won the case. Just so we're clear on it. Part of the problem I had was that there was one of the documents that was submitted as evidence, I assume, was the last report from Stephen Walcom about, it's like a mid-season report or an end-of-season report, I want to say 2007, but I'm not sure of the date, of his performance. And I read it several times. There didn't seem, Coley, to be any indication that this was coming, that if the league was dissatisfied with his performance, the review didn't reflect that. It reflected the same kinds of things that other reports had reflected. You know, work on this, do this, try this. You talk about his skating was awkward, but he managed to get to where he was supposed to be. Those kinds of things. It just didn't seem to be coming in any way from Stephen Walcom.
Well, I can't speak completely to that exact case.
But is that report inaccurate? Am I portraying that inaccurately?
Yeah, and I'll tell you how you're portraying it inaccurately, is that we know, his group knows, we know in our room, we watch games every night, we know who's a weak referee, we know who's a strong referee. And in this case, Stephen Walcom, when you don't make the playoffs, You have one-on-one meetings. Stephen has one-on-one meetings where he verbally discusses things with our guys. Look, I don't blame them. When they think they're going to, we've had a few that said, look, I can't do it, I agree with you, and they move on, a few guys over the years. Some guys fight it. They don't want to be let go, and I don't blame them. They're trying to save their jobs, but they can't do it, and they disagree with our analysis or the officials' analysis, the officiating management crew, and Stephen doesn't do this in a vacuum. He does it with 8 or 10 of his officiating managers who are all officials in the National Hockey League. And they debate it because we take seriously when we let a guy go. As I said, we spend too much time with these guys. And we don't want to say, hey, just throw them out to the wolves. Let's pull another one in. It's hard. It's hard to find good referees. And as far as why one would think, did we not like him for some reason? Was there a secret agenda? There wasn't. We have no secret agendas for anyone. Like, they can cut it if they can referee. I don't care if I don't get along with them. They don't like me. They don't like Steven. They don't like Terry Gregson. If they can referee, they're going to stay in referee. And because to referee in the National Hockey League is tough. And you see our best referees making mistakes because the best officials in all sports make mistakes, and now the way games are covered, John will tell you, he's been there since it was black and white TV. The number of cameras, the slow motion. Last night we had a call, actually it was in Stephen Walkham's game.
Theo Peckham.
Yeah, he fired the puck, it's in the stands. What the heck? He was given a 2-minute penalty. The puck went through the photographer's hole. And it was a tough one, but we would have never seen that if we didn't have the coverage we have.
Part of the Warren case was, though, there was an agenda against him because of his union activity.
Well, first of all, it was proven, actually, you can talk about my emails, and I'm sure you might get to those, is that in the emails that they secured, any conversation Stephen and I had over 3 or 4 years, there was no talk of union activities. I didn't know he was on the union executive, and we wouldn't. I don't even think he was a. Well, maybe they call all five or six of the guys are vice president, but he wasn't one of the main two individuals. And honest to God, there was nothing about union activities at all. Like we had no issues with the officials association. We weren't close to any sort of work stoppage. And we had a tough negotiation this year, this summer, but we got to where we had to get to. And you know, our owners say, "Look, at you guys got to negotiate hard. You know, talk about their severance." And we say, "Well, the severance is a no-go. We're going to keep the severance." You know, there's lots of tough issues, but at the end of the day, there's nothing personal in any negotiations we had with the union at the time when Dean Warren was on the union.
What do you make, though, when guys like long-term officials like Kerry Fraser and Dave Newell take the stand and side with him?
We were upset. I felt like in all my time doing this job, it's 11 or 12 years now, it's too long. There's only one time I disagreed. You know, like our director of officiating, he chooses who moves on in the playoffs every year, every round. They run it by us and we say, "Fine, you know, we have some negotiations. Why this guy?" And it's normally not, "Why does this guy move on?" We say, "Why did you not move that guy on?" Because they're going to have questions. And the only disagreement I ever had and stepped in was I asked Andy Van Helman to move Kerry Fraser to the finals in 03-04 Tampa,
04.
Tampa-Calgary,
yeah.
In 04. And that's the only time I ever stepped in. But when, you know, Kerry Fraser steps up and is bitter about the league, you really dislike that. Dave Newell, he testified. Dave Newell, we've gone to bat for Dave Newell several times. I don't want to get into specifics because you're not, you know, it's not right to speak about it here, but it's we don't have a lot with the number of people that move on, but there's a few, and then it just seems they're the ones that are always given the microphone when they're asked for a comment because they give you spicy answers.
With Coley Campbell, the vice president of hockey operations for the National Hockey League, we'll talk a little bit more about the Dean Warren case, the grading of officials in the National Hockey League, and a little bit on discipline as well, all when we continue on Primetime. You're listening on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, watching on Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
22 past the hour. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, and Coley Campbell, VP of Hockey Ops for the National Hockey League, in studio. I don't dwell on this forever and ever, amen. So I want to get to some other things. But in reading, we're talking about the Dean Warren case, and in reading the judge's assessment in his final analysis, which the National Hockey League, by the way, it's important to note that the NHL won this case. The judiciary determined that Stephen Walken was not a credible witness. And maybe for no other reason than he may have had a vested interest in justifying the decision that he made. I would say this to you, Mr. Campbell, that in reading, again, that assessment, plus the transcripts of the trial and the emails that were sent, my own personal opinion was I didn't see too much evidence, as you stated previously, that Stephen Walken was anti-Dean Warren, that he was looking for a fight, looking to get rid of him, giving him bad reports. I cited the report earlier that really wasn't all that bad, is the last report that he got. But the email suggested that you weren't real thrilled with him. And I want you to respond to that. Also give it in the context that of what you said earlier, that, you know, we all see referees, we all have opinions on stuff, and we understand that, but it's your job to sign the dismissal, but not to make the decision on where the officials go. In retrospect, did you think that you had an influence in Stephen Walken's verdict ultimately on Dean Warren?
Well, first of all, Bob, I wouldn't say it was Stephen Wacom's alone. As I said, he doesn't act in a vacuum. He bounces it off his staff of 8 or 10 officiating managers that were all referees or linesmen in the National Hockey League for 15 plus years.
But the communications by email that we saw were all between you and Stephen.
And I'm sure there's more communications, but with other people. But you know, when they sit down, when we watch games, we're critical. Like, our officials have called our room heaven because they think that we think, you know, we're perfect. We're in heaven and we're perfect in that room. But we promise, as I said before, we promise the teams, the players, the coaches, the ownership, the manager, the fans, we promise them accountability. Players, I always get this line, players get traded, they get sent to the minors. What are you going to do with this guy? You know, and coaches get fired, I get fired, the managers say. So we're tough. And on calls they make, and we send all those calls to our officiating group. And they will then, if Terry sees fit, if Steven saw fit, if Andy Van Helman saw fit, Brian Lewis, and we didn't do a lot of it with Brian Lewis because we hadn't developed our video room back when I first started, but if they see fit, then they will take that game that we saw and what we thought we saw was a wrong call, an incorrect call. They will take those calls to those officials in question, and they'll send them the video clip, ask them to explain them. And the idea is not to criticize and beat them up. The idea is to make them better, like you make players better with video sessions every day. And after a while, you start sending the same clips or clips to the same official, game in, game out, game in, game out. And you know, you have comments in your room when you're working. Oh, boy, you know, we might have this guy tonight. You know, and I didn't invent this. John will know he worked with us for a while. Oh, this might be a sweaty palm night tonight in this game. You know, this official's struggling. And so, you know, and sure, they're going to have the odd tough night. The best officials will. But when they start having tough nights too often, and you know what? A guy might have 15 great games, but you can't have 15 great games out of 82.
No, but you're the boss, Coley.
Right.
And Stephen Wacom worked for you.
Yep.
And if Coley Campbell is sending emails that said, this referee is subpar, he missed this call, he did this, he did that, regardless of what Stephen's opinion is, there's a lot of pressure on him to respond to you.
No, there's not a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure. I you know, you didn't get the emails about the other referees and all the other games, you know, and it might be my opinion. It might be the other people in the room's opinion. I might be sending the opinion of a manager, a coach. I didn't like this guy's game. We just had one last week from a coach. He missed three calls in this, you know, would you please look at it? You know, it was subpar. We're accountable. We lost a game. I think this guy had an awful night, and I think he has a lot of awful nights, you know. And I said, okay, hold it. You know, he's not that bad. He's, you know, blah, blah, blah. He was upset, you know. 2 weeks later, they forget about it, the coach. But we dealt with it. So, you know, you're talking about one referee. We're demanding. We should be demanding. We're the best league in the world. We want, and we tell these guys, they're the best referees in the world. And you know what? They told us that last August when they redid their contract. We're the best referees. We want a good contract. So, you know, it's a give and take. And I expected them to be the best referees. So, you know, you may have had a couple emails about one referee. I asked Stephen Wacom about a lot of referees. That's my job. You know, we have to make them accountable. And owners ask us. They all ask us. You know, you don't want to see what some people say about them in our game. But they get mad and they get passionate. I was passionate when I was a coach. You know, when you get into a tough situation, you forget about it later on. Maybe sometimes you don't, but you get passionate. So, Bob, that was just one referee, the Stephen Wacom. But I've done it with lots of referees with Stephen Wacom, and they should have accountability. And Stephen filters it. He takes it, and then he says, "No, we'll deal with it." And then they make the final decision, and I say, "Fine, Stephen."
I think the bigger question and the bigger confusion is the fact that you were sending emails that. In games that your son was playing in.
And games, I think two games, I think, and I ask, go ahead, sorry.
But no, but I think that that's where, and there is a process, and you need to explain the process, but I think any time there's a perception of conflict between family members, with family members, I think that that becomes an addressable issue, don't you?
Well, it becomes an addressable issue. You're right, and I've tried to address it from day one when my son made the National Hockey League. I tried to stay out of every game, any game when he was with the Florida Panthers that he was involved in, any supplemental discipline rulings, any video reviews, I was out of it. And you were there, John, many a nights in the room when you worked with the National Hockey League. In this case, whether it was him who got a penalty or someone else, I would ask the question, was that, and if you look at it, was that a penalty? You know, I think this player dove, faked the dive. Was that a penalty? And it wasn't, you know, Steven was a very good administrator. He never took these questions. I would ask that question about a lot of players, and a lot of managers would ask me that about a lot of players. In fact, in the one game I'd ask about a penalty, the GM of the game called me up and was chuckling. Don Waddell in Atlanta came about the penalty. I asked Steven to look at it. That's all I did. Was there pressure felt or exerted or influence on a referee? Not at all. You ask our referees. Our referees, when they skate on the ice, you know, to be influenced by that, there's lots of influences out there that could affect referees. Scotty Bowman, would he influence you? Sidney Crosby, Wayne Gretzky, ownership, you name it. There's lots of influences. But when our guys skate on the ice, they call the game.
But have you learned? Are you going to write more emails questioning penalties against Gregory? Because that in the end becomes the crux of a lot of what the complaint is. Fair or unfair?
Fair or unfair, you're right. And it was the wrong thing to do to write an email like that. But for Steven, I would say that about a lot of penalties called. Like Steven was the type of individual. I said, Steven, your referee's called a crappy penalty tonight. Your referees. He said, they're your referees too. And I said, I know Steven, but you know, I'm getting it. And it was kind of the way we talked. And I hold these guys to the utmost standards, and they're professionals, our referees. And you know, we've been going on about how we hold them accountable and we hold them to high standards. That is about 5% of the issue. The 95% of the issue is, and you've been there, John, I've defended them to the wall, to the hilt. I've screamed with managers. I've screamed with coaches. I've screamed with people. Like, in a way, I'm painting the wrong picture here because you don't know how much these guys don't know how much I defended them. You've been there, and there was screaming phone calls on many a night. I'd have to walk out of the room and scream.
With Colin Campbell, the NHL's Vice President of Hockey Operations. Last point on this, unless John wants to continue this. Here's the other part of this equation, and this has nothing necessarily to do with you specifically, but evolves out of this entire issue. And that is the question of transparency with respect to the officials. I have always... It's not a big deal, because in truth, most fans could care less about who the officials are, could care less about how they call games. They care about whether they perceive that a referee screwed them out of this play or this goal or whatever it happens to be. But as an entire group, as a collection, who cares? We want them to be, in the best case scenario, they're invisible, they're not part of the story. It's the same with umpires or officials in other sports. And the NHL is no different. But should there be greater transparency in the process? And I struggle with that one, and I tend to think there should be. I don't know what the answer is. But I have no clue what happens to a referee who blows a call. I have no clue what happens to an official who is deemed to be subpar. I don't know what the process is. I know that guys get paid for 70, I think it's 72 games under the contract, whether they work them or don't work them. I don't know whether you take guys, if a guy blows a call, can they get fined? Can they get punished? Will they miss assignments? I know that you choose your playoff referees based on their performance over the course of the year. But is there any advantage to being a little bit more transparent? And you know this is a bugaboo with me when it comes to the NHL as a whole. Is the notion of a clandestine society that doesn't want to let us in. Just trust us. We're making the decisions. We're not telling... It's not our job. You don't have to know how we do this. Can you? I want to give you an opportunity to respond to that notion. Should it be a little bit more clear?
Well, I'm not sure what part is not clear, whether it's making that one mistake in a game or when we feel the referee at a certain point cannot referee in the National Hockey League anymore. There's a big difference between making a mistake. Everyone makes mistakes every night. whether it be a coach putting the wrong player out, manager making a weaker trade than he wanted to make, blah, blah, blah. When a referee makes a mistake, I mean, we don't fine him. It's his judgment. He may have missed something. He may have had something in his line of sight.
Will you change an assignment? Would you change his schedule? If he blows a big play, if he misses a number of plays in a given game, what's the criteria?
We'll change assignments. For example, OJ. We've been careful with him in Vancouver and when we're going to put him in the Vancouver game. We had four French officials in a game where it got lots of notoriety when supposedly one player uttered some comments about four French officials, you know, and then the politician got involved with Shane Doan, and someone said, well, you better be careful. We look at every possible thing. Like, I never even dawned on me, who cares, it's four French officials or four guys from Africa refereeing. Sure. And so, but as far as washing our laundry publicly, Bob, I don't know how much you want us to. We don't want to embarrass these guys. They make mistakes. They do things. We work with them internally. Like I said, we spend a lot of time with our officials developing them. I think we were talking about this today. I think we're up to $500,000 to $750,000 invested in an official with salary, supervisors following him around until he becomes a full-time official in the National Hockey League. He goes up and down from the American Hockey League to the NHL, and he finally makes it. And we just don't want to throw that guy away lightly. And to be transparent, we're not going to wash his mistakes, no different than you'll see coaches defend their players after a game. I don't know how transparent you want us to get, how much you want embarrassment. These guys, they have a life. I mean, they got to go back. You know, I never could get it why when a referee or a linesman skates on the ice, they get booed. When they fall down, they get cheered or they get hurt. I don't get that, but that's just, I guess, sports.
And well, that's sports. That's no different than umpires in baseball or any other sport.
But people, if you want to be transparent, you want us to wash their mistakes publicly. Like when we make decisions, there's some things that have to stay private on these guys, and we can't. I've said probably too much here, and I said, you know, how tough we are on them. But as I said, these guys are great professionals. There's 32 referees in the world, and these are the 32 best referees, and that's pretty good. We have 700-plus players, but only 32 referees can make the grade, so that's not an easy thing to do.
Coley, we're out of time. We got to go. It's always good of you to join us, and we thank you very much under these circumstances because there's been a lot of talk about this issue, and we greatly appreciate not only you joining us, but joining us in studio to talk about it.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you. Coley Campbell, the Vice President of Hockey Ops, or as we fondly refer to him, the Sheriff, yes. Joey Votto, National League MVP, when we come back, and Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Roger Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
17 before the hour, Bob McCallum, John Shannon on the radio program on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet in high definition, coast to coast. Toronto boy makes good. Cincinnati Reds first baseman Joey Votto wins the National League MVP title. 31 of 32 first place votes, 443 points, easily outdistancing Albert Pujols. And it's not that I'm surprised that Joey Votto won, not that I don't think he was deserving, because he certainly was. But I must confess, I'm a little bit surprised by the margin.
How is the amazing story when you think 31 of 32 first place votes?
Well, that's pretty dominant. Here is the National League's MVP, Joey Votto. Well, I know you've had many congratulations already on this honor. Let us add to that list. Congratulations, an extraordinary achievement. How do you feel?
I feel pretty good. You had mentioned that you were surprised. So was I. I was pretty surprised also.
Not surprised that you won, Joey, you understand, but surprised by the dominance of it.
I was surprised also about the all the first place votes.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Bear with us for a second. I mean, I know you've told the story many times. A kid out of Richview Collegiate in Toronto gets drafted out of high school. Was it a Blue Jay scout that saw you, or a former Blue Jay scout that saw you? Because you understand that there would be many who would say, well, how do you get seen coming right out of high school in Toronto?
Definitely not a Blue Jay scout. You know, I don't even think the Blue Jays knew who I was. To
really,
agree.
Huh?
Well, I don't mean to badmouth the Blue Jays. I'm not going to do that. But the two teams that were really paying attention to me were the New York Yankees and the Cincinnati Reds. I think to be fair to the Blue Jays, I was a late blossomer, so I wasn't really on the radar screen. And the Yankees like left-handed hitters, and the Reds, they must have seen something in me, and the Reds had a pick before them, and I ended up getting drafted, by the Reds with the 44th pick.
It would be impossible for me to assume that you weren't aware that you were being scouted. Is that accurate? You knew?
Well, when you've got 3.5 fans at your high school game, and
and one of them's a scout, yeah.
Yeah, two of them have pens and pads and radar guns, then you can't help but miss that or pay attention to that stuff.
So, Joey, put it in this in perspective. The story of your late father and his passing in 2008, and what you've had to fight over the last 18 months. This is really a triumphant measurement of what you've done since his passing, isn't it?
I would say that I've certainly overcome a lot. It's a pretty big achievement in and of itself. I think that, the last two and a half years or so, or 2.25 years since he passed, they've been difficult. They've slowly but surely gotten better. But, I'm sure you've got a million listeners right now that have experienced something challenging or difficult or have lost someone. And, that's how things work. It takes time. Not everybody grieves or accepts loss or accepts life and death in the same way. And, it took me time. I was completely overwhelmed while still trying to be a major leaguer and keep to myself. It was a difficult, balance.
Was your dad responsible for you being a baseball player? Did he lead you into baseball? Was he a fan?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say, I don't know if he was a fan. He was just, we'd play catch every day.
Yeah.
For years, actually. He wanted me to be a pitcher, and I ended up hurting my elbow in my mid-teens, and he was disappointed, and I was disappointed, and so I started really focusing on hitting because I was a pretty good hitter too, and I eventually got a lot of attention from college teams and obviously the professional teams, and I don't want to say he jumped back on board, but, he really thought I was going to be a pitcher, and so did I, and it just kind of surprised the both of us that I got all this attention as being a hitter.
So, and putting the personal side in perspective, the professional side is that the Reds were one of the great stories of the 2010 season, but were, I think you would admit, a bit of a disappointment in the playoffs. What does this, how does this measure against what the team did during the regular season and playoffs?
I think both were a surprise. I don't think anybody before the season would have predicted that, I would have been the National League MVP, and I'm pretty certain that nobody would have picked very few would have picked the Cincinnati Reds to have won the National League Central Division and, played against the Phillies in the playoffs. So, I don't know. I'd say they're probably on par with one another.
With Joey Votto, the National League MVP. Trying to put it in context, this is a great individual award. Maybe success as a team will come to the Cincinnati Reds. It certainly appears you have a team that could be competitive for a while. You never know how that's going to unfold. Where does your appearance representing Canada in the World Cup come?
World Cup?
The World Baseball Classic.
The World Baseball Classic, sorry.
I was going to say, I don't play soccer.
Sorry.
Come on now.
Well, you know enough about soccer coming from this town, Joey.
Okay, ask that question again. I was distracted by my joke after joke after joke.
The World Classic, the Baseball Classic here in Toronto, the ability to play for Canada, to put that uniform on. Where does that fit on the list of achievements or memories?
I probably in my top three or four, maybe even top two. The MVP, I haven't had a chance to really step back and appreciate it yet. So it's you know, it's moving up the charts. But, you know, the playoff experience was nothing like I'd ever experienced before. It was just different. It felt different. The atmosphere was different. The competition, everything was just so much different. But it was what I wanted in baseball. That's what I had strived for and worked towards. And that World Baseball Classic wasn't that much different. It was exciting. It was it was international, and it was in my hometown. And I played really well, which helped.
Mm-hmm.
But with or without playing well, it would have meant a lot to me. And seeing all those fans and, you know, the patriotism, and it shocked me that so many Canadians came to the Sky Dome, or excuse me, Rogers Center. Do I get fined for saying that?
No, it's okay. I say it all the time.
came to the ballpark and really supported us, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I made a point to write a letter of thank you to Bud Selig because of, you know, just how much that meant to me, so young in my career, to be able to experience that. And he thanked me for that letter. But, you know, I really hope we continue with this thing.
Now, you do know, after the season you've had and this award, the Sports Illustrated cover, every pitcher in the National League knows you're coming now. So next year is going to be a little tougher.
It's part of the job, you know. From the day I put a professional uniform on, I made a point to go 100%, and you know, there's going to be adjustments that I have to make, and I'm going to have to be more efficient, and I'm going to have to work harder, and you know, that's just the nature of the game. You know, it's every day. You know, you have a responsibility to go out there and give your very best, and I think I'm proud to say that. You know, I play a sport where just about everybody does go out and do their very best.
Well, in the next couple of weeks, a group of ink-stained wretches and gravelly-voiced broadcasters are going to gather at the Toronto Star and determine the Lou Marsh Award, which is given every year to Canada's Athlete of the Year. I wouldn't have expected it would go to anything but an Olympic athlete, given that we just finished Vancouver in the Olympics and how extraordinary they were. But I will tell you, Joey Votto is going to be in the equation this year, and we wish you good luck.
Who would be up for it from the Olympics?
Boy, I would say just about everybody that won
Alex
a gold.
Alex Bilodeau, Sidney Crosby, a few guys like that.
Yeah.
Sidney Crosby, who else?
Alex Bilodeau is a freestyle skier.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
Canada won 14 gold medals, so there's probably a whole bunch of people there that would have a case.
Yeah.
But you're in better company. Larry Walker and Justin Morneau.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good group, huh?
You can't get much better than, going to the Olympics and representing your country. So to be in that discussion, wow, that's a true compliment.
Well, I guarantee you'll be in that discussion because I'm on that panel, and I'm going to make sure you're a part of that discussion. Joey, congratulations. I know you've heard it many times. We thank you very much for taking a few minutes for us. Have a great off season, and we'll look forward to talking to you down the road.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Joey Votto, the National League MVP from the Cincinnati Reds, Toronto boy.
Hey, his old man would have been proud.
I'm sure he is.
Yep, I'm sure he is.
Our thanks to Joey for joining us. Also to Coley Campbell for being in studio, the sheriff of the National Hockey League. That'll do it from us. Have a nice evening. We'll see you tomorrow on Primetime Sports. Good night from Toronto.